You're listening to PetLifeRadio.com.
Is your pet stressed out? Does your pet need annual vaccines? Which pet is best for a child? Would you know if your dog was in pain? Pet Life Radio presents The Pet Doctor, where you'll learn everything about keeping your pet healthy and happy. From pet care, pet meds and grooming, to pet food, pet insurance and dental care, this is the place to find out everything there is to know about pet wellness. Whether you have a dog, cat, reptile, or rabbit, you'll find answers for your pets straight from the vets, because it's your pet. Health matters. Please welcome your Pet Doctor host, veterinary media consultant and veterinarian, Dr. Bernadine Cruz.
Man and woman's new best friend is the cat. There are over 82 million kitties purring their way into our homes and hearts. Sadly, our feline house guests receive less medical care and less research dollars. This shortcoming, along with their ability to hide their signs of illness, often condemns them to shorter, less healthy lives. The Morris Animal Foundation and the Happy Healthy Cat Campaign aims to keep our cats perfectly healthy. Listen and learn ways in which you can spot potential health issues and keep the kitten in your cat. My guest today is Dr. Joe Bartage. He is board certified in the American College of Veterinary Internal Medicine, along with board certification by the College of Veterinary Nutrition. We'll be right back.
Please have a seat in the waiting room. The doctor will be with you shortly, right after these messages.
Greetings, human. What planet am I on?
Welcome to Pet Planet. Here's a copy of Pet Planet magazine, Florida's most informative and fun pet resource magazine. It features heartwarming stories and informative articles from local and national pet experts.
Excellent.
Pet Planet magazine offers Operation Planet Rescue, helping rescued pets find new homes. And it's available at 500 locations in South and Central Florida and 24/7 on the internet at PetPlanetMagazine.com. If you're out and about with your pet, you may be featured in paparazzi, candid pictures of you and your pet. For up-to-date pet-friendly events, activities, and pet-related services and products, Pet Planet Magazine is your final destination.
I shall take this magazine home with me.
Back to your home planet?
No. To my condo in Boca.
Pet Planet Magazine. Check them out at www.petplanetmagazine.com or 352-394-8578. It's out of this world.
New York, the glitz, the glamour, the exciting Muttropolis, the sparkling kitty city that never sleeps. Join us each week for Pets in the City with your host, Diane West. Celebrity pet sightings, hot events, and news and reviews with the hottest movers, shakers, and tail waggers in New York. So take a bite out of the Big Apple with Pets in the City every week on demand, only on PetLifeRadio.com.
Let's talk pets on PetLifeRadio.com. Welcome back to The Pet Doctor on Pet Life Radio with Dr. Bernadine Cruz. The doctor is in and we'll see you now.
Dr. Bartage, thank you so much for being with us today. I've read your articles in journals and I just think we're just going to have a fantastic conversation today.
Well, thank you for inviting me on the show.
Well, I know some of your areas of research is something that happens all too frequently. Kitties walking through the door with urinary tract problems, and we're trying to blame it on food, or we're trying to blame it on full moons. Idiopathic feline cystitis. I understand that's part of your research area. Is that correct?
Yes, it is.
Can you shine a little light on this?
Well, a little light. It is idiopathic because we don't really know what causes it. It certainly seems to be related in part to behavior and the overall nervousness of the cats, as well as the environment in which they live, which sort of triggers things. But there is some evidence that it can be related in part to diet, especially to dry formulations of food rather than canned formulations of food. I mean, those cats that have that problem.
So you could have a nervous kitty and that causes it to be more prone to getting these little bladder issues?
Well, it seems to be related to stresses that the cat may undergo. A new pet in the household, whether it's a cat or a dog, or a new child in the household, or a move, or a cat in the yard, something that seems to trigger it that that it puts some additional psychological stress on the cat. It's a little similar. It's somewhat similar to something that occurs in women called interstitial cystitis, which is also in part has a psychological basis in part for the problem. And so that's what some of the data right now suggests in cats, that it's related to something that just really stresses them out.
I probably in veterinary medicine, one of my most favorite words is one you just said, idiopathic, because I tell my clients that I always feel like an idiot because I can't figure out what's causing it. So it's nice to know I'm not alone in that. You know, here's somebody with lots of extra initials after their names, and it still don't know what it is.
No, we still don't know what it is. Unfortunately, they don't even know what it is in women either. They just call it interstitial rather than idiopathic.
Well, I was mentioning at the start of this that kitties are so good at hiding their signs of illness, and that on top of that, to compound the problem, there's not a lot of research dollars. Why is that? There's more cats in the world, or at least more cats in the United States in our homes, than there are dogs. Why are they being shortchanged?
Well, I think there are a couple of reasons for that, shortchanging of cats. The first is that cats are not typically used by investigators on the human side of medicine as research animals. Dogs typically are. So a lot of effort went into understanding dogs kind of more than cats because they have been used in human medicine for laboratory animals and research and teaching and things along those nature. So the cat kind of got ignored in all of that. And then the second is, there's still a problem sometimes, or there is still a problem in veterinary medicine with cat owners bringing cats to veterinarians for care. And a lot of the care that's given to cats is done at home by the owners. So when you look at many practices in veterinary schools, the number of dogs brought in versus the number of cats, the number of dogs far outweighs the number of cats in those practices, except for maybe specific cat-only practices. So, again, what you see more of one dog or one breed of dog, you tend to gravitate to looking at the health issues related to dogs or to one specific breed.
You'd mentioned that we know so much about dogs, and I know that now we know the complete genetic map of a dog. And cats, are they there yet?
Not quite, but getting close. There has been quite a bit of effort recently. The dog genome genetic information was sequenced within the last couple of years, and then they started working on the cat sequence. So it's slowly getting there, and probably very soon we will have that capability. And it will start slow like it has in dogs and in humans as far as using it first more as a research tool in a way to determine what the genetics of certain diseases are. But I think with time in dogs and cats, it will become a diagnostic tool. What's the risk of a certain cat or dog developing a certain disease, knowing what we already know in medicine, that certain breeds and ages of cats and dogs are prone to different diseases.
Bringing that up, it's important to know that I think at different life stages of a cat, you think of a kitten and what are the diseases that they're going to be more prone to, and then you go to the other extreme with the senior citizen kitties, and I'm definitely seeing many more cats that are into their super senior years. Dr. Barges, could you kind of break down what are the risks that you're most likely to see according to the particular life stage of a kitty?
I'll give it a shot. The one thing to know is that from a nutrition standpoint, the American Association of Feed Control Officials, which oversees the nutritional adequacy of pet food, they don't they do not recognize a geriatric or senior type of formula. That is, the life stages are growth, pregnancy, lactation, and adults, and they don't break the adults down between young, middle-aged, and old adults. So when a cat becomes geriatric is a little unknown. We certainly, especially at a referral hospital, tend to see more what I would call middle-aged or older cats, you know, that are 8 to 10 years of age or older, up to 20 or more sometimes years of age. So what are the diseases that we see in certain life stages? In kittens, probably the main things are infectious diseases or developmental issues. Respiratory diseases, intestinal parasites and things like that, and then things that they may be born with or nutritional inadequacy. In young adult cats, and I'm not sure how to break these down any further, but in the cats that are, you know, 1 to 10 or so years of age, the things that we see more of are intestinal diseases, certain types of respiratory diseases, urinary tract diseases, especially the idiopathic cystitis, struvite stones, those kinds of and so those are kind of the more common things, in addition to routine health care and perhaps skin disease and things along those lines that occur at a younger age. When you get to older cats, that's typically when we start seeing things like endocrine diseases like diabetes mellitus and hyperthyroidism, hyperactive thyroid glands, certain types of heart disease, cancer, kidney failure, certain types of stone disease, calcium oxalate, for example, these more of older cats than younger cats, liver disease, dental disease, and rare, occasionally neurologic disease. So there is a little bit of a break, but any of those diseases can occur at any age, just as we see in humans and in dogs.
Dr. Barges, if there's so many different diseases and so many cats, why is it that they're not going to the veterinarian so often? I know I personally don't like taking my cats, you know, to the hospital because you stick them in a carrier and, oh, they just caterwaul the entire time.
Well, I think that's part of it. Cats are a little bit, as a general rule, different than dogs. One of the quotes is paraphrased something like, you know, humans own dogs, but cats own humans. And so
I agree.
part of that is, they kind of tolerate us, I think, more than anything else, having owned cats also. You know, they come and they're certainly affectionate, but then they do spend a lot of time alone, even if they're indoor-only cats. So part of it is that the signs that they may show aren't as readily noticeable as they are in, say, dogs. I think the other part of it is, as you mentioned, just the stress, as it were, of transporting cats is a lot different than with dogs. I mean, I own dogs and a cat now, and I mean, the dogs are jump in the car and they're ready to go. They drive all night if you let them, but the cat would just prefer to, you know, be left alone, and they like being kind of in their own little world and kind of safe from everything else around them. So I think that's part of the hassle factor as well, is catching them, convincing them to go with you, and then getting how sometimes stressed out they get with a car ride, and then they sit in the waiting room where there's dogs barking and other cats and lots of noise, and it's just they're just not into that kind of excitement typically. So I think that those are probably some of the main reasons why a lot of cats aren't brought in. It puts a lot of added stress on them, and they, as you mentioned before, they hide signs really well, and they're not as noticeable.
What are some of the signs that people should look for?
Well, they're oftentimes very vague, especially in cats. And sometimes they have these signs and they get worse, but it's hard to notice. So cats who are long-haired cats that groom themselves and they, you know, throw up fur balls, if they start vomiting more, you don't really notice it because you're kind of just used to it. You know, they bring up a fur ball every once in a while and suddenly you didn't realize they'd been now, vomiting, throwing up, more than normal. They don't eat. And again, sometimes that's hard to tell. If you put down measured, even measured amounts of dry food, most cats don't go and just eat the whole bowl as a meal. They go and nibble a little bit and they come back and forth and back and forth. So it's hard to sometimes tell for sure how well their appetite is and whether it's decreased or not. Other kind of general things are isolation. A lot of cats, when they get sick, kind of just disappear. And cats are solitary anyway, but they do like attention and they sit with you on the couch and things like that. And suddenly you go, geez, for the last couple of days, I haven't really seen Fluffy. And they're hanging out in the closet or under the bed or just ignoring everybody around them. Some cats will develop some discharge from their eyes and nose, which would be out of the ordinary for them. Or they just don't look good. Their hair coat, which normally is nice and shiny and soft, becomes very brittle and very dry.
And it's kind of like those bad hair days that they have.
Yeah, not just a typical bad hair day. And a lot of that is due to the fact that they don't, when they get sick, many cats stop grooming themselves. So they go through the daily, more than once a day often, ritual of grooming and licking and cleaning. And they suddenly stop that because they don't feel well, and then they start looking poor. And if in the litter box, then you may notice that their stools are loose, even in clumping litter, it just, the consistency has changed. And many diseases look like one or more of those signs as part of the problem.
I think a lot of the problem is people may notice there's a difference, and then, of course, the first thing they do is they go to the internet to see if they can find the answer and go, oh, well, it's drinking lots of water, so it must be diabetes, and they've already made the diagnosis. I think what's so important, what I'll always tell my clients, is that try to keep a pet health diary, and I don't care if it's a cat or a dog or a gerbil that you have. You see your pet day in and day out. Start making some notes about things that just seem different. When I first got out of veterinary school and somebody would bring in their pet and they say, oh, it's just not doing right, and they would give me these vague signs, and I would look at it going, ah, it looks absolutely healthy to me, and then would find out, nope, this person definitely was correct. Something was wrong. And cats, when you take them into the veterinarian, I always tell people it's somewhat like when your car, you take it to the mechanic. It never makes the noise. It never does what it's supposed to do. So, stick by your guns, pet owners. If you notice that something just doesn't seem right, take it to your veterinarian. Make sure that they follow up on this. Maybe you are incorrect, and that would be wonderful. But in case you are right, you may be saving your pet's life. Right now we're talking to Dr. Joe Burgess, and he is with the Morris Animal Foundation, as well as having many other accolades. We'll be right back after this short break and talk about more ways to have a happy, healthy cat. Stay tuned.
Please have a seat in the waiting room. The doctor will be with you shortly, right after these messages.
Want to know what cats like to eat for breakfast? Mice Krispies, of course. Learn everything there is to know about cats on Catitude with your host, Tom Dock. Each week, we'll spotlight a cool cat breed, give up-to-date advice on cat health, and check out spiffy new cat products. So curl up on the couch every week for a perfectly enjoyable time on Catitude, every week on demand, only on PetLifeRadio.com.
Let's Talk Pets on PetLifeRadio.com. Welcome back to The Pet Doctor on Pet Life Radio with Dr. Bernadine Cruz. The doctor is in and we'll see you now.
Dr. Burgess, tell us, what is the Happy Healthy Cat Campaign?
Well, the Happy Healthy Cat Campaign is a campaign that the Morris Animal Foundation initiated last November, around the middle of November. And it actually, it represents, at this point in time, the major funding source for research that is specific to improving the health of cats. It came into being with the idea to increase the amount of research funding for cats, with the goal to provide veterinarians with diagnostic and treatment tools for improving the well-being of cats. Not only the quantity of life of cats, but the quality of life of our cat friends. It also has another goal to improve or increase awareness of cat owners to, as you mentioned before the break, to seek veterinary care. If you go to the website at Fourth Animal Foundation, which give the website of it at some point, as well as the specific website for the campaign, there are additional resources concerning studies that are ongoing, general information for cat owners, and lots of little fun things, quizzes and things like that, that cat owners can access.
I think most people would, number one, think, oh, research. Well, this is going to be funded by the government. Is that an erroneous thought?
It is. In fact, the Morse Animal Foundation is a not-for-profit organization, and it originally developed from the idea of Mark Morse Sr., who was a veterinarian, and his goal was to direct attention and interest in looking at and studying the health problems of dogs and cats and pets and wildlife to improve their quality of life and their health. So the Morse Animal Foundation is again, a not-for-profit organization, and the research, the dollars available to fund studies actually comes from donations and from sponsorships. So there's no government money involved with it. People who donate to the organization, 100% of their money that they donate goes to funding studies in the area of health issues related to cats and dogs and horses and birds and ferrets and pocket pets and wildlife. The animals that have been neglected by many other funding agencies, especially government funding agencies like NIH and USDA and things like that.
People, when they hear the word research and animals in the same breath, I think conjure up all these horrid images of little cats in cages, scared out of their little wits, sitting there getting poked and prodded and surgeries. Is that what we're talking about here?
No, not at all. In fact, a lot of the studies are clinical studies. So these are looking at new diagnostic tests and new treatments for cats, and we're talking about cats now specifically, but other, you know, dogs and birds and things like that, that are owned by people and have a certain disease for which we don't have anything good or reliable to diagnose or treat with. And so many of those projects that are funded, the studies, health studies that are funded, are not those kinds of studies. In fact, they are very strict guidelines that the foundation has concerning the types of studies that are involved. And when someone submits a proposal to the foundation, there is a group of veterinarians and scientists, and I have been a member of the scientific advisory board, that we meet and we go through each individual proposal one by one. And look at not only the scientific merits of the proposal, but also the welfare of the animals that will be involved with the proposal to make sure that things are done correctly and appropriately and that things are justified as to what's being done.
With all the technological advances there are, and you have computers that seem to be able to walk and talk and chew gum at the same time, a lot of this research seems like it's unnecessary to do on a live animal. Can't we just do them all on a computer or, you know, have some type of a mock-up so we don't have to subject, even though these are somebody's pets that they're taking home with them, can't we just use computer models for a lot of this?
Some of it, that's true, but or cell cultures or, you know, non-whole animals, the research like cell cultures or computer modeling. The problem is, because we don't know everything about a live animal, what the computer looks at, my understanding, not being a computer person, but what the computer does is try to model what might happen. But if it doesn't have all of the information, and we don't have all of the information to program it with, then it can only give us the information based on what it knows or what it's been fed. So while we can do computer modeling, and a lot of the kind of preclinical things are done first along those lines, you still don't know what happens until a living being is treated with a drug or a procedure or a new diagnostic test tried and shown that in spontaneous disease, whether it's kidney failure, hyperthyroidism, or diabetes, or whatever the disease, that it actually works. So I guess the real question becomes, you know, would you want, if it were you or your cat, would you want something that's never been evaluated in a whole animal, a whole cat, or a whole person, only been through computers, and then hope that it works? Or would you like to know that at least it's been safe and been shown at least safe and hopefully effective, you know, when administered to your cat? So, again, a lot of it, and again, as a scientific advisory board member, we can look at it, is it necessary to do research or do this health study in a living animal, living cat or not? But many of them can't be. You don't know how they respond to a drug until you give it to a living cat. You don't know whether a certain type of cancer in cats will respond to this new drug until you actually start treating it. In a test tube, it kills the cancer, but you don't know until you actually give it to the whole cat.
Some people might say that, okay, doing all of this research on cats is nice, but, you know, it's just a cat. How is it going to affect people? It's just a cat. I can't see how this is going to have any application for human health. Are there research projects going on right now that cross the species barrier? It helps the cat, but also helps the human, or even vice versa?
There are. In fact, a lot of the things that we do clinically in veterinary medicine, we extrapolate or, you know, take out of human literature. And so, you know, kind of in a way, the, you know, humans are what we use to try and look at new drugs to try or new treat, you know, new diagnostic tests. But the other side is certainly true as well. Even with clinical trials, we get information, and there's a lot of collaboration and more between veterinary physicians and scientists and human physicians and scientists with treatments and diagnostic tools. And so, yes, there is a crossover of information between species. And Morris Animal Foundation, you know, is really designed, though, to fund research that's specific to cats or to dogs or to birds. But it is not, they don't really fund research where the goal is we're going to use a cat as a model for a disease in humans. The main mission of the Morris Animal Foundation is to fund research that's going to benefit the cat. And if an offshoot of that is providing some information that helps people, wonderful. But that's the main mission, is to help, you know, the animal.
What are some of the research projects that are presently in the works?
Oh, there are a lot. In 2008 alone, the Morris Animal Foundation funded over $1 million in research just for cats. So there are a lot of things that are ongoing. There are studies right now with kidney failure in cats, hyperthyroidism, diabetes mellitus, Stone disease, feline asthma, cancer. So there are lots of projects that are ongoing, and, you know, good data is coming out of them that will benefit cats and cat owners.
I think a lot of listeners may be very shocked that cats get cancer, cats get asthma, and there are so many diseases that we do share with our cats, and it's just one of these things, you need to be aware of it. I always recommend taking your cat in at least twice a year for a good wellness check. And oftentimes people say, well, you know, I never go see my own doctor unless there's something wrong, so why should I take a cat? And knowing that these cats are way too good at hiding their signs of illness, coming in, having a good looking over, bringing in your pet health diary with you is so crucially important, because if you can find a problem before it becomes, excuse me, catastrophic, you have a much greater chance of having a better outcome. It usually costs less to treat this, and, you know, you have a happier cat who doesn't have to go in as many times and see someone such as yourself or me. one of the things I found very interesting while looking on the Morris Animal Foundation website is that they now have a vaccine that they're working on to sterilize cats so they won't go out and make babies. Is that correct?
That's correct. And there's some research that shows that it might be an effective way to do that. And part of it is with the feral cat population and, you know, the cats that are domestic cats that are no longer really domesticated, that can be a major issue for health of the cat, health and potential health of people, and certainly to the wildlife in the area, trying to keep those populations under control.
Well, I think the Morris Animal Foundation and their Happy Healthy Cat campaign is definitely something that everyone, all the cat listeners right now, should go to the site. What's the site name again? What would be the website?
Well, there are a couple. Yeah, there are a couple. The Morris Animal Foundation website is www.morrisanimalfoundation.org. Then they do have a toll-free number if people are interested in calling that, which is, if I remember it or can find it, 1-800-243-2345. And then specific for the Happy Healthy Cat campaign, the website is researchforcats, and it's the number four, so research4cats.org. But the link is also there on the Morris Animal Foundation website, as well as lots of other information related to studies and funding and, again, success stories and videos and pet owner information, lots of things.
Is there a way for people to donate through that site?
There is. There is, if I remember the link, there is along the top a link that says getting opportunities or something like that.
Well, there is so much marvelous research that's coming out of the Morris Animal Foundation, working on the cancers, trying to curb the overpopulation in the feral cat population. And not just cats, you know, they work on, as you mentioned, dogs and horses and gerbils and all these other little creatures out there who are needing our assistance, because government is not right now able to take care of people, let alone taking care of the animals. So if you're a pet owner, go to the Morris Animal Foundation website and see how maybe there's ways that you can help. So the goal of the show has always been to entertain, educate, and motivate you to be the best pet owner that you can be. If you have questions about your particular pet, the best person to ask is going to be your daytime veterinarian, your routine primary care veterinarian. But if you have some other questions, you just want a second opinion, please feel free to contact me at thepetdoctor@petliferadio.com. We've been talking today with Dr. Joe Burgess. He is with the Morris Animal Foundation. Thank you so much, Dr. Burgess, for being with us today.
I appreciate the opportunity. I might add also that I have served on the advisory board for Morris Animal Foundation, but I actually am on faculty at the University of Tennessee, so I have to put a little plug-in for Tennessee here.
And you wear multiple hats, and I love the fact in your bio that you state that you have 5 children. And I was reading through to see what you have, and there's Patrice, and then there's Garrett, 2 humans, and oh, by the way, the others are made up of 2 boxers and Mr. Bill the cat. So this is definitely somebody who knows animals.
Yeah, and I've had many, and then had many other 4-legged children as well in the last several decades. So we're just down to 5 right now.
Just 5. Well, thank you so much for being with us. Stay tuned next week when we'll have some more information to entertain, educate, and motivate you. This is Dr. Bernadine Cruz for The Pet Doctor. Take care.
Pets can be a wonderful addition to your life. Keeping them healthy and happy is important. Pet Life Radio presents The Pet Doctor with veterinary media consultant and veterinarian Dr. Bernadine Cruz. Whether you have a dog, cat, reptile, or rabbit, you'll find answers for your pets straight from the vets. The Pet Doctor, on demand every week, only on PetLifeRadio.com.